Welcome to A Minute to Midnight. This is Tony, and today we are bringing you part one of a three-part interview series with astronomer Gil Brassard. And the topic we are dealing with is Planet X, or Planet Nibiru, Planet 7X, whatever you want to call it. And Gil believes that the models he is using show that Planet X was the main thing that God used to cause many of the signs in the Bible, both Old and New Testament. And then that's in part one, we'll be dealing with that. In part two, we're going to deal with secular history and also more modern times post-Bible. It's fascinating. And part three is probably the most fascinating of all, because it will be dealing with how Gil believes Planet 7X will be the main contributing factor to the signs in the book of Revelation. So here is part one with Gil Brassard. We've joined by Gil Brassard. Welcome, Gil.
Well, thank you, Tony. Appreciate being on your show today.
Yeah, I've heard you a few times on other shows, and I find it really fascinating, so I'm looking forward to this myself. But can you give the listeners a bit of a background as to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm an amateur astronomer that's been studying the plausibility of an outer planet, which I call Planet 7X, according to my research over the last 4 to 5 years that I've done. I started off as a skeptic.
So that's interesting. Yeah, and so what changed your mind?
Data.
So,
actual scientific data on white paper reports. There is data that pertains to this planet, and it also coincides with the biblical records.
So you believe that God used this planet to cause the major biblical signs seen in the Bible? Like, as a master creator, he placed this planet in orbit, knowing when the orbit would bring it close enough to Earth at precise times in order to fulfill signs, as we see in the Bible. Would I be correct in that?
Correct, because we only knew the science in the last 15 years pertaining to the universe being a electromagnetic missing in nature instead of gravity rule. And so this model proves out 14 events in the Bible, and it would be very hard for them to mimic consecutively the data correct that marries to a model in such, you see, exact standards. It's just not possible. They had to have seen a real object.
So in no way does it negate from God at all. It's just like people could say, oh, well, no, well, it's explaining things naturally when God did things supernaturally, but God can use the natural to do the supernatural.
We would both agree on that, yes.
Yeah, that's great, yep. So can you give us some examples then of how Planet X caused signs, or, well, you take us where you want to go with this.
Well, there's, according to my research, it started with the Asian records with the Chinese, Korean, and Japanese astronomers. They saw a real object in the year 1054, and they documented it, and they documented it so well on given its location in the sky that when I read the white paper report, I decided to plot a segment of its course according to the data that we had. And that data gave some startling results. It was an object they saw for 26 months.
Wow, that's a few while.
13 months come in, 13 months leaving.
That's big.
That meant right there, that's a sizable object, planetary size object, to be able to see it that far ahead of time as it would orbit like a comet. And when we plotted the segment, come to find out, it crossed the Earth path twice with a span between the exit and the entry point of 150 to 152 days. Well, that brought up to memory two events or two time periods that are mentioned in the scripture records. One, Noah's flood, where earth stayed flooded for 150 days.
Yep.
And then in the book of Revelation, it says where they wished death for 5 months. 5 months is also 150 days. And seal 6 and 7 are two meteor showers. When we put the data together, that was a awe moment that kind of stood out.
The thing is, though, that Noah's flood was, the earth was flooded, but Revelation, we don't see the earth flooded again. Is that because of the way the orbit coincides with the earth, or what causes the difference?
Well, if we go back to outside records like the Book of Jubilee, the Book of Enoch, and a few other books, you get a further details that fills in some of the missing gaps in the scripture. One of those books mentioned that there were 7 floodgates that opened up. They were at a canopy of water, which are actually 7 meteors made openings in this canopy. Took 40 days for the earth to actually flood. And then the earth stayed flooded for 150 days. On the second event, which is 150 days later, a large meteor hit the earth, which is what made the Gulf of Mexico. And that, in turn, knocked off 71% of our crust. The volume of that crust is equal to our moon, okay? And that's where the water receded, which made the ocean. Remember how Pangaea is represented as one landmass?
Oh, yes, supercontinent.
Well, that is defying physics a little bit. Because if the Earth is molten and it's spinning, you should have continental crust evenly distributed throughout the surface. And that's not what we see with Pangaea, because the upper crust floats on oceanic crust.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oceanic crust is the second layer, like an onion.
Ah, okay.
And the top crust is only sitting there held on by gravity. So the only way that Pangaea could actually hold together is if it was landlocked. By that 71% that's missing right now, that happens to be the exact volume of the moon. The moon has gravity, but it has no magnetic field. And yet, the surface material tests electromagnetic, and it has a light magnetic field on the surface of the missing material. And there is iron oxide found on the surface. Well, instead of iron ore, it's iron oxide. Iron oxide is rust. You can only have rust if that iron ore is exposed to moisture and an atmosphere.
Yes.
The moon has never had an atmosphere because it doesn't have a magnetic field, or it doesn't have enough to hold one.
Fascinating.
And there's no core because it's only made of crust.
Right.
The moon was made during the time that Earth was not solidified as a molten mass. It was made after Earth has hardened. And this proves out in the data. So, in other words, a large meteor impact the size of the Gulf of Mexico is a meteor roughly 110 miles across to make an 1,100-mile crater.
Wow.
And there's a problem with that, and that's why scientists are not accepting the Gulf of Mexico as being a crater, even though it has all the signatures of one, is because with the math. They say you have a level of heat when it explodes or hits the Earth, but then there's a frequency that it generates that causes carbon molecules to violently ignite. They would spontaneously combust. So you have plant life, animal life, and human life that would be vaporized in a ring of fire all the way around the Earth, and you have a burnt cinder. Well, the only way that that would cancel out is if the Earth was flooded.
Yeah, makes good sense.
Gulf of Mexico was made during the time that Earth was flooded because that's the only time that the heat is no longer an issue. And it would take an impact that size to eject 71% of the crust to make the moon.
Wow.
So you have a logic triangle. One cannot exist without the other.
Uh-huh.
And so we have physics involved right here that are proving it out. And that was the first event we have is Noah's flood. 364 years later, oh, by the way, you may have heard many people on the internet mention that it has a 3,600-year orbit.
Yep.
That's not what the data is proving. Remember, we saw it in 1054 A.D. That was only like 960 years or so.
Was it only in Asia that it was reported, though?
It was reported in other areas of the world, but they used different terms. You see, they didn't have modern terms like planet or comet. See, the Asians called it a guest star. Some of the ancient civilization called them pagan god names.
Yeah.
Like Zeus, Jupiter, so on. Remember Zeus, they said, would throw lightning that would melt mountains. Lightning bolts that would melt.
Yeah.
That's a plasma discharge between two planets.
Ah.
We have a plasma discharge crater in Africa. You can look this up in Google Earth, called the Eye of the Sahara. It's a 30-mile-wide crater that's not concave, so it's not a meteor crater. It's a crater done by plasma. It's flat with eccentric rings moving closer and closer to the center. And it dissolved about 300-foot depth of a mountainside. This was a 30-mile lightning bolt, basically, of plasma.
Massive.
Being discharged between the two planets whenever they pass, because the universe is electrically charged. It's a electromagnetic ruled universe. Gravity is the minor force, which is being proved out by physics. The astronomers have this wrong, and it's been proven out lately when comet sighting springs passed near Mars.
Ah, yes.
NASA pulled away with this video because, remember, they have like a 7-second delay feed on what they're showing the public. Well, just before the incident, they pulled away from it, showing a very far distant view.
Very interesting.
Luckily, we have an amateur astronomer from Spain that went to Canary Islands and set up cameras there, and he was able to capture it. And it shows Mars lighting up when the tail of the comet crossed Mars' planet. There was an electrical discharge that lit up the entire planet like a light bulb.
Yeah, I've seen that video. It's pretty impressive.
Yep, on my YouTube channel, people can actually see, it's called a bonus 2 feature, and you can actually see the evidence that the universe is a electromagnetic model. It is not. Remember how astronomers say the tail of a comet is ice particles?
Yeah.
Well, the physicists say the tail of a comet is plasma.
Ah.
And it proved out in that actual live incident. The physicists were predicting this, and it came out. That's a live laboratory test, you can call it, in nature, that proves out the physicists are absolutely correct, that the universe is an electromagnetic model.
So,
and this model proves out Joshua's long day.
Yeah, I was going to come to that, but so you're basically saying NASA didn't want people to see the footage, is that right?
Correct, because they have it. They pulled away just before it sort of public concern. Remember, there's a delay on what they were transmitting to the public. And you can pull up NASA's video on that and compare it against the amateur astronomer. And you tell me if they didn't want you to see it. Why would they have such a massive event not documented or shown to the public?
Yeah, very suspicious.
Because sometime Earth will pass through the tail of a comet. And if that's true, you're going to have the same effects, which is like an EMP wave.
And so that's what you're saying the big plasma lightning was when Planet X went through one previous time. Is that right?
We have multiple strikes, but one of the ones that I found that's most eye-opening is the Eye of the Sahara. It's 30 miles across. Think of a 30-mile lightning bolt.
Wow.
That which is a little bit more than just lightning. It's plasma. It is, but it's more intense. It dissolved part of the mountain, 300 foot in the mountain.
Wow.
And created a circular crater that's flat.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
And you can see these plasma discharge craters on every planet this Planet X passes near. That's Mercury, Venus, Earth, the moon and Mars. You see plasma discharge craters on all of these planets because they've been in very near the orbital path of this object in the past.
So they're basically covering it up. It's, yeah, so you were going to tell us about Joshua's long day.
Well, after Noah's flood was Sodom and Gomorrah,
yeah,
at the same time of the Tower of Babel. Both of these two incidents happened at the same time. The Tower of Babel was burned up. Remember, it was fired brick, and the top of the tower was burned. The base of it sank, and only the middle existed for all time. Well, you can look on Google Earth and look south of the old town of Babylon, which is the mid-kingdom where Daniel was. Look further south of that, and you'll see the remains of a ziggurat that matches this description. There's a water moat around the... There's a moat filled with water that's around the ziggurat. Only way that happened is if it sank into the ground, which is liquefaction, which is what this planet causes, earthquakes, drought, usually associated with a seven-year drought. You got 3.5-year drought coming in, 3.5-year drought leaving. You have these plasma strikes. You have fish killed, bird killed because of the methane releases, tsunamis, you name it, weather change, drastic weather change as what Earth is seeing at the moment. And so Sodom and Gomorrah, and you know how Lot's wife was, the biblical records show she was turned to a pillar of salt,
yep,
which is man's description of after the fact. But the Almighty did not say that he was going to turn her to a pillar of salt. The Almighty said, don't look back.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what happened was they found Sodom and Gomorrah now. It's north of the Dead Sea. And digging up these remains for the last 10 to 12 years, they found the southern part of the town. It's 55 acres, the town was, which is one of the largest cities of that time period.
Oh, that's interesting.
The south, I think it was the southeast corner of the town, the homes were blown off the foundation like a massive explosion happened. People's bodies were thrown against the wall, shattering their bones. They found people dead as they lie. Matter of fact, the oldest homosexual couple was found dead and buried together. And pottery shards were hit with such intense heat that it turned the outer layer of the pottery shards into glass, which is, I think it's called Trinidite, which is only found near nuclear explosions.
Wow.
Well, a meteor, this is also when a meteor explodes above ground, also causes the same effect. So there was two different towns that were destroyed by two different meteors. And when she heard the first explosion, she turned around. And when she went back out to see what happened to the town, the second meteor exploded in mid-air, vaporizing her, just like Nagasaki.
Ah, yes.
You've had people vaporize where the shadows left on the wall, just as they were standing. Well, that's what happened to her. Her shadow was left, and then ancient man comes around and say, look, God turned her to a pillar of salt.
Ah, yes.
But she was vaporized, is what now that we can, evidence is showing that.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And I was stating this almost a year before the archaeological evidence was showing this, according to our findings. And then after that was Joseph of Egypt. Remember the seven-year drought?
Yep, yep.
Well, this planet came midway of the seven-year drought. And how do we know this? There's an ancient artifact from Europe called the Nebra Sky Disk. It documents a extraordinary event. It has a pattern of stars and planets and moon and sun on this disk. And when I saw this disk, it caught my attention. So I read the museum write-up about it, and I noticed that they missed some points that was quite obvious if you know astronomy. They were saying that this was a normal eclipse, and it can't be a normal eclipse. The sun is, remember, the only time that you can see the stars is if the sun is eclipsed, and this Niebuhr disk, which is about 12 inches around bronze with gold inlay, stars and moon and sun. The only way that you can see the sun and the stars is if the sun is in the eclipse mode. But the moon is thrown in a crescent shape. Well, sorry, that takes a new moon to eclipse the sun, not a crescent. So that tells you right there that the sun, the moon is not involved with this eclipse. But they're showing the moon. And then the professional astronomers or interpreters did not catch the moon was facing the wrong direction. The illuminated side had to be facing the sun. So the makers of this had the moon facing the wrong direction. And therefore, the astronomers were looking in the wrong date. They were looking for like a three-day-old moon when they should have looked for like a 23-day-old moon. And so once I was looking for a not a conventional eclipse, which is what they were looking for that threw them off, I was looking for, there was three planets shown on there. Mars, Jupiter, and Mercury were shown on the disk as well. And it showed Gemini and Capricorn on each side that framed the month of April. From the latitude of Germany. This was found in Germany. So when I went to that same latitude and moved back in time, I was able to find that this event happened on April 6, 1810 BCE. And the only thing we had to compensate for is during Hezekiah's time, globally, the calendars changed from 360 days a year to 365 and a quarter days.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, so I'm glad you're coming to that. Yeah.
So I compensated and I subtracted 16 years from what the astronomy software shows us. And that calculates to exactly midway of Joseph of Egypt's drought. We can pinpoint the year and the day now.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting, this was before it crossed Earth path for like an eclipse. It has to be, you know, maybe 3 days out before it crosses. Remember at age 17, Joseph had a dream that he saw he said sun, stars, and moon bow to him.
Yep.
Well, there's a problem with that text when you look at it through astronomy. You can't see the stars if the sun is out. Ancient word or they've been illuminated body. It's another illuminated body, not the sun. It was this planet he saw that was illuminating. And that's why you could see the stars and the moon out. And this literally happened 3 days after this eclipse. The skies actually literally bowed because Earth tilted 26 to 28 degrees. Because the Niebuhr disk also proves out from that latitude, they could not see the constellation Messier Orion, which is at the bottom of the disk, unless Earth tilted 26 to 28 degrees. And this Niebuhr disk tells us all of this when it's properly interpreted.
Uh-huh.
And this confirms the event of drought of Egypt and the skies bowing to them. These actually happen.
Interesting. And then so we get the other... Well, why did the calendar permanently change?
The calendar during Hezekiah changed. Remember where the shadow went backwards on steps.
Yep. Yep.
On some English Bibles, it says sundial. But in the Hebrew, it actually says steps.
Yeah.
A sundial won't work on the model because that's a east to west rotational change. Well, all of the oceans would have emptied out and covered the continents. And nothing is documented about that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
If we take the original Hebrew story and look at it, it says the shadow went backwards on steps.
Yes.
Well, if you face the steps north and south, that's exactly a 26 to 28 degree tilt again, according to the calculations. And this time it passed close enough. Remember, I have to put this in perspective. Prior to that, the planet Ceres got destroyed with a head-on collision. And that's what made up the asteroid belt.
Right, okay, yeah.
Now, that magnetic influence, Earth is trapped in a magnetic trough. Well, because of the absence of Ceres, that trough expanded slightly. Well, now when this planet passed by Earth, it drug us to the outer edge of our magnetic trough. And that gave us 365 and a quarter day year now, from 360 to 365 and a quarter day year. As documented, not just biblically, but throughout globally, whoever was holding a calendar at the time. Within the next 5 years, known civilization changed their calendars to 365 and a quarter year. Something took place.
Yeah, big time.
And keep in mind, they knew the calendar year because they were keeping track of the equinox, telling them when the winter is over so they could platten their crops. We have ancient Mesa observatories globally that's what it was there for, to signify when winter was over. So they knew exactly how many days was in a year. And they had to change at that point. So to go back to see how this influenced, let us go back. The next event after Joseph was the Exodus of Egypt, where they had 3 days of darkness. Well, in relation to these 3 days, remember there was 3 hours of darkness during Yeshua's sacrifice.
Yep, spoken in Mark 15:33.
So how can we get 3 hours turned into 3 days of darkness from the same event? Because this is when Ceres was destroyed, just prior to the Exodus. Therefore, the forward movement of this planet was 1/20th of its normal speed, and that caused 3 days of darkness, to where you couldn't see your hand, see in front of you, globally. It was a global darkness that happened for 3 days.
Well, that's a fascinating conclusion.
And that's documented in Egyptian history and many other points. Ah. So that's why we can have 3 days of darkness during Exodus. And that also talks about the fiery hail and every other thing it talks about.
Yeah. Could it also have had an effect on the parting of the Red Sea?
It's possible that maybe Earth tilted or something like that. It would help with the Red Sea separating, because it was only for a period of time that this thing separated. And then when the Egyptians tried to cross, the water came back. I can't explain exactly how the Red Sea separated, but our models is not that exact. We know that there's a bulge of water around the equator, about 12 kilometers. And if Earth stops rotating, that water starts to dissipate towards the North and South Pole, starts to separate. So you have a drop in the sea level around the equator and a rise in the ocean levels, North and South Poles, you see? But it won't be immediate. It would take weeks to do that. Between Joseph and the exit of Egypt was about 275 years. Now, after the Exodus, the Joshua's long day was only 52 years. Because the next 4 events, it took this planet 4 passes around the sun before it regained its total orbit, its normal yearly trip around the for it to regain its normal orbit. So the first pass was only 52 years because it was going slow. Then it picked up a little bit more speed. Then it gained 131 years, and then 336 years, and then finally 358, where it reached Hezekiah's time. But right after the Exodus was Joshua's long day.
Joshua 10:13, that is, yep.
Where Earth entered into the tail of this comet, and that caused Earth to slow down by 12 hours in its rotation. As the stars are, only in a plasma model can Earth slow down as it enters into the tail of a plasma. Joshua's long day, we can actually, we can prove it out in a model. And then remember where he says, only the enemy was killed by fiery hail.
Yep.
So if you know anything about meteors, they might be in orbit 1,000 years or so. Well, what's interesting is each one of these meteors had a name on it for a particular soldier, because only Joshua's enemy was hit. He had an army of 30,000, and the enemy was 300,000. And none of his 30,000 men got hit by the meteors, only the enemy.
So there must have been a bit of distance between them then, I suppose.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, this was sword fighting, hand-to-hand. They're hand-to-hand fighting. There wasn't a great distance between them.
Okay, so that's pinpoint accuracy then, so it really shows God's hand in it, doesn't it? Then after that, what was the next major event that happened?
So after that was 131 years later, it made the second trip around, it gained a little bit more distance and speed. Is the two events, in Job's trouble and Ruth, the drought of Ruth. Remember the Ruth's, they had a severe drought at the time, and she came back to her home. It was during a Jubilee and a Sabbath year. The Sabbath year, the poor can pick into the field. If you look at it, Boaz is not harvesting his own field. He's watching the people harvest his field.
So they were gleaning there, yeah.
And that was a Sabbath year where the poor is a, you don't harvest on a Sabbath. You let the poor go in and pick as much as they want.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the following year, she was able to get her land back, which happens to be a Jubilee year. So we can pinpoint roughly when this event happened. Then at the same time, that if you go and look at Job's trouble, the first event talks about his shepherds and all his flock of, I think, camels and whatever other animals he had was totally decimated. There was no bodies left even. And then two more verses down, it talks about his children were partying in one of their son's home, and a great wind came by and knocked down the house.
That's got to be some fierce wind.
That's the pressure wave from the impact that destroyed his shepherds and his flock, that didn't leave any trace of the about it. It may have exploded above the earth. It may not have had a crater, but it vaporized his flock and his shepherds, and the pressure wave knocked down his children's home, killing it. You can pick this up. It's quite exacting on the model, the way these events are given as far as detail. Then 336 years later was, remember, King Saul and David were, King Saul was hunting down David until David took over the king, being the kingship. Well, this planet passed at the same time that this event between Saul and David was happening. This is where we got the Star of David from, which was implemented during Saul's King Saul's time here. The priest of Saul was the one that implemented the Star of David, associating it with this planet that passed at the time of David, because there was a 3.5-year drought during the end of Saul's reign and 3.5-year drought at the beginning of David's reign, giving you 7-year drought, which this planet does. 358 years later is Hezekiah, when the shadow went back. But just before Hezekiah, 40 days earlier, Jonah was in Nineveh, giving the 40-day warning to Nineveh. In 40 days, your doom comes. Well, what's interesting about Jonah is what's not being said. They never said he performed one miracle.
Yeah, that's a good point. No.
How do you get a town of 20, 30,000 people
to repent?
To repent without showing them a miracle?
Yeah.
Because the only thing you had to do, remember, they didn't have the internet, they didn't have TV.
Yeah.
They were in tune with nature.
Yeah.
So what they saw was bird kills, fish kills, the drought they were in, where the crop was failing, the earthquake, the seasonal changes, weird weather patterns. The only thing Jonah had to do was point to the sky, because at 40 days, the model shows us you can clearly see it from Earth.
Uh-huh.
It's rounding the sun out of the backside and it's coming in clear view of Earth. So the only thing you had to do was point in the sky. In 40 days, your doom comes.
Fascinating, yes.
At the same time, 40 days later was when the shadow went backwards, 26 to 28 degrees, 10 steps.
Yep.
Because Hezekiah asked for a sign.
Yep.
And he said, well, the shadow, it's impossible for the shadow to go backwards. So he asked God to move the shadow backwards. That's like reversing the seasons. Okay?
Mm.
And the way he did it was he changed the tilt of the earth using this planet, giving Hezekiah an extended 15 years of life.
That's a fascinating way of looking at it. Yep.
Then 5 months later was the event where 185 Assyrian soldiers were killed during the nighttime. When the Assyrian king woke up the following morning, all his soldiers were dead.
Yeah.
185, and they died through the night. Well, there's ancient Jewish text that says that some of them died from fiery hail. Well, it's a meteor storm.
Yeah.
Well, 150 days later, remember, the event in March, the meteor shower is in the daytime, like it was in March for Joshua's long day. 5 months later, the event is at nighttime, which is what happened to the 185,000 soldiers. They died during the night. And they were camped right outside of Jerusalem, ready to invade Jerusalem the following morning. But the Assyrian king woke up with all his men died. And in ancient texts, this planet can also be called a messenger from God, which is the word what angel means. A messenger, this planet can be, in other words, he's bringing a blessing to Jerusalem by killing their enemy who are about to invade them. And the deliverer of it is this planet. Therefore, it's called a messenger of God. It can be, in the text, it still can be held to that. They didn't say they saw a form of a man like an angel. Okay, you got to remember when the two angels were at the tomb of Yeshua, they were in the tomb, they saw two angels that looked like men.
Yeah.
So they describe them as men, but they were angels.
Yeah.
This angel was not of a man type. It delivered a message, all right, but it was because it had movement. That's why you often see a disc with wings throughout history. That shows it's an object. They don't know what it is. They didn't have a word for planet. They call it illuminated disc, but it had movement and that throughout the sky. So they put wings on it, showing that it had movement. That's an artist's depiction of movement whenever you see wings. So after that, 352 years later, was Haggai at the Second Temple. Judah came out of their captivity. They cleaned the foundation of the old temple, and they put a tent temple up. They didn't rebuild the temple. They had a temporary temple. And life went on for a couple hundred years. Well, Haggai came there and said, God is angry because you didn't build his home. You built priceless mansions to yourselves, but you didn't build his temple. And this was during a Sabbath year and a Jubilee year, because he says, now you will not rest during the Sabbath, and you will rebuild his temple, and the Almighty is going to shake the entire earth and have riders of chariots fall out of their chariots. The whole earth was shaken. Well, what's interesting right there, this happened during the same time Alexander was taking Tyre. And there's a documented historical event that when he built the land bridge to take the island of Tyre, the place of Tyre, when he had the land bridge built, he was trying to break down the wall. He had a problem. He couldn't get past the wall of Tyre. And these meteors came out of the sky, broke up into five pieces, and collided into the wall. And this is where his men said, God's favor, Alexander. They're backing him. So the meteors came out of the sky, colliding with the wall of Tyre, allowing Alexander's men to enter and conquer Tyre. This is where Alexander's men thought he had the favor of God, because out of the clear blue, meteors rained down from heaven, knocking down the wall of Tyre. This was at the same time as the prophet Haggai was telling the people of Judah that the Almighty was going to shake the entire world and that they're to build his temple. And they did after that, because it was a startling event. And then after that was Yeshua's sacrifice. And if you read the text carefully, it says the sun and the moon were darkened. In the scriptures, it mentions multiple times double eclipses. You can't have a double eclipse at the same time.
No, it's impossible, isn't it? So how do you explain that?
Well, because remember Isaiah at the time of Hezekiah changed the way they observed the feast. It stated in the book of Psalms. Psalms is, I think, five books, and Isaiah wrote part of it. And he stated, now their festivals are associated with the lunar timing. Before that, it wasn't. And now, but there was a reason for that. So at this time, so this perfectly times the Passover at a full moon opposite side of Earth. This was a full moon event. It takes a new moon to make a solar eclipse. So the moon is on the wrong side of Earth, but yet you have a double eclipse. This is automatically describing a third object. And a normal solar eclipse made by the moon can only be 7.3 minutes. The text says 3 hours. An outside text in the secular world also describes the entire Earth went darkened for 3 hours.
That's real interesting.
A solar eclipse does not darken the entire Earth unless it's a very large object. And guess what? The model proves out. An object roughly 6 to 7.5 times the diameter of Earth would give you exactly all of these events that I'm describing.
And it would, they all fall into the same sort of patterns around 360 years, is that right?
If it hasn't collided with something, yes. It has a erratic orbit, but if we had to put a number to it, it's closer to 360 than 3,600. And because we can go back in history, we can prove that Earth tilted on its axis 3 to 4 times. Earth is tilted 26 to 28 degrees. And we can prove it by double eclipses. You look for 7-year droughts. You look for earthquakes, volcanoes, fish kills, bird kills, lightning, plasma strikes. All of these phenomena associated with a plasma universe model.
So, yeah, you've been listening to Gil Brassard talking today on A Minute to Midnight, and what a fascinating interview it is. We will be continuing in part two. In the meantime, Gil, can you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, they can go to www.planet7x.net, and they can download a free PDF book that shows all of the events in the biblical and secular. And also, they can, if anybody has a hard time describing the science behind us, there's a DVD there that they can order or download a digital copy. And it also gives you a link to the YouTube channel where I describe a lot of the biblical events in detail.
Great.
And, this would help your audience be able to get a grip on this object.
Awesome. Okay, so thanks, Gil, and we'll carry on in part two.
Sounds good. Thank you.
So that was part one. In part two, we will be dealing with secular history of Planet X and in post-biblical times what has been seen. And then later on, we'll be talking about the future. What do we see in the future? That'll be in part three. So it gets real fascinating. So you will probably want to, if you haven't already done so, subscribe to our YouTube channel. And also visit aminutetomidnight.com, our website where we post all our interviews and also other articles. I'd like to thank people that donate via our donate button on the website. It really helps to keep these videos coming because it's very time consuming. And also I write and record all the music that we use on our shows, and you can find a link to rockshoresounds.com on our Minute to Midnight website. And if you use production music or sound effects from rockshoresounds.com, you also are directly helping to support aminutetomidnight.com. So this is Tony signing off for today, and hopefully we will catch you in the next episode, which will be part two.